Blog Talk Radio.
On December 12th, 2012, it's kind of quiet outside. Maybe the holiday season has started already. Anyway, that's not what I want to talk about. I'm going off on a tangent. What I want to talk about is this. Everybody knows already about that nurse in London who apparently killed herself because she got fooled by a prank call. Two DJs called her from Australia, and they pretended to be the Queen and Prince Charles, and she put the call through to the nurse who was looking after Katie Middleton, you know, the princess or duchess or whatever she is. She had morning sickness because she's pregnant. She was in the hospital, and this dumb nurse put the call through. Anyway, she killed herself when it was, you know, she realized she made a mistake. And after that, a lot of people are asking themselves, how should I speak to other people so they don't go off the deep end? And I, myself, have to worry about that, too. I try to screen my guests to keep out the crazies, but I don't control the callers. Anybody can call into this show. I don't know what they're going to say to each other, and I don't know who's going to go crazy. Even if you're at work and you criticize somebody, you can run into trouble. The guy can come back tomorrow with the machine gun and kill everybody. You know it's happened before. And I've always thought that a big issue if you're working with someone is how you handle conflict, because you're bound to have disagreements all the time. And I've never seen anyone ask that question in an interview. You know, how do you handle conflict? No client has ever asked me to ask somebody that, but I have a good answer. In case someone does ask the question, if the interviewer says, how do you handle conflict, you should say, look, I try to prove my point, and then I let it go. There is no perfect justice in the world, and even if I'm right, I can't expect things to go the way I want. You've just got to shrug and move forward. Like in the army, your boss might be a jerk, but she's still the boss, isn't she? You gotta listen to her. So I share what I believe, and I don't make trouble. That's my policy. I'm a good hire. You won't have any trouble with me, but you might have trouble with me, the recruiting animal, and Jerry. Jerry, what show is this?
The recruiting animal.
Hunting. Be nice.
He's not hunting, Rayanne. He's taking
care of business.
No, he's taking care of business so then he can go hunting later in the afternoon with his friends, okay?
Well, he told me yesterday he was off to kill some pheasants.
Yeah, he knows it's your brother on the show. He didn't want to make you feel bad, okay? And so let me just deal with something right now. Andrew Thorne, the guest, Rayanne's little brother, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Okay. Good. Nice to have you here, but I got to take care of some preliminaries. I have a real reservation about having you here because I'm friends with your big sister, Rayanne. Yeah, and she's a very feisty girl, as I'm sure you know, and I'm afraid if I criticize you that she's going to go crazy. So I want to guarantee before we move ahead, I want her to know that you're a big boy, and she better lay off me, okay?
Yeah,
I haven't
called him
my
little brother for a long time because he's 6'2 or 6'3, aren't you, Andrew?
Yeah, 6'2. That makes no difference.
Yes, it does.
I'm 6'2. People yell at me. Doesn't stop them.
Oh, please.
Okay. Okay. Hey,
you
I got
yell
this
at them
right
first.
Out of this book.
People yell at you
right.
as a defense mechanism, yeah.
Well,
animal.
Are you the guest or is he the guest? Okay.
Andrew is.
Okay. Now, he's here today. Let me ask this. I don't think this is a good way to introduce yourself, but this is what he suggests in the book. Andrew Thorne, what are you famous for?
I'm famous for being the father of 7 children.
No,
I think that's the thing I'm
no,
most famous
that's
for.
True. You're not famous for that. See, I have to do everybody's elevator speech all the time. He's a success coach to the successful. That's why I thought, you know, Jerry's so successful, he was going to come here and advise Jerry. He takes people who have reached a success plateau. They're not satisfied with their lives anymore. They're so good, they don't know what lies ahead. Just like Ecclesiastes, right? Straight out of the Bible. And his guy comes and takes them to the next level, okay? Now, Jerry's not here, and I can't have him coach his sister, so that might take the edge off the show. But anyway, that's what he's a success coach. And maybe the little people who aren't successful can learn something from you. That's since we don't have any successful people here for you to coach, I want you to coach the little guys who are not successful, if at all possible.
Well,
okay, Andrew?
If you read the book, you know the definition of success is very different for me. So the little people are successful
in my
eyes,
too. You know
what? I got to
tell you something. Let's just, you know, I don't like people who play with words like you do in your book.
Oh, knock
okay?
it off.
No. I don't like people who read the Bible and then make up their own definitions for the words so they fit what they wanted to say. Just let's leave that alone for a second.
You did read the book. I'm so impressed. Thank you.
Okay. It was short. Anyway, here's the first issue he handles. Here's the first issue the success coach handles in the book, how to build rock-hard abs. Now, if you tell me, I'll tell Jerry, okay? How do you build? How does a guy like Jerry, who's got lots of money and kids and success, how does he, because I know he doesn't have rock-hard abs, how does he do that?
You have to eat healthy and you have to exercise. Arnold Schwarzenegger said, no one ever got muscles watching me exercise, and no one's going to get rock-hard abs without doing those two things.
Okay, do you have rock-hard abs now?
Not currently, but I did at one time.
I don't believe you have to have not much skin or fat under your skin to have a six-pack. Not everybody
He's had
can
them.
Have one.
He's had
I had them.
Okay.
I,
so
had
why,
him
okay.
I had them 6 months ago, but I started eating the cheesecake again.
You have to follow on your own advice. Okay, so let's just get right into it. Okay, so first of all, we haven't sung for a while. Just let me see if there's anybody here I haven't opened up. Okay, we're going to sing a song. Did you bring a song that you'd like to sing?
Me?
Yeah. You're
sure.
A singer, right? You sing. What song that we can all sing with you?
Do you know the song by The Killers?
Which one, Romeo and Juliet?
No, All These Things That I've Done.
No, we're going to sing, you know, the chorus from The Rising? It's an idiot could sing it, okay? This is what it sounds like. La la, so la la.
It's just la la?
Yeah,
la-la.
It's la 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 la. Takes no breaks, okay? So,
that
Brent,
wasn't fun.
Sing. You're going to sing. I'm going to sing. Anybody else who's here want to sing?
What? Well, that all we're going to sing is La La La.
La La La
yeah.
La La.
Well, I don't know the song he came up with, so we're singing
well,
a song
let him sing
anybody
it.
Can sing.
He can sing it for you.
We all sing, Maureen. You know the rules here, okay?
No, I'm not Maureen. Ran. Moran. I'm not Maureen.
Did I call you Maureen? Then no wonder. You're both
you
the same, okay?
You called me
Maureen. Nasty. You're nasty. Okay, we're going to sing this. Can you sing
okay.
that?
Sure.
Andrew?
Sure.
I'll play it while we're singing, okay?
La 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 La.
I did it.
Thanks.
You sing your song. You sing. Okay, let's just get this over with. Let's do what Rayanne said. You sing your song until I cut you off.
Okay. When there's no one else to run, is there room for one more son? One more son. If you can't
Mother!
Hold on.
Yes, okay. We had enough of that, okay?
Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, let's get down to it. Now, I read your book, and I gather that the world is divided. This is why I said, you know, can you teach nobody? the world is divided. This is what I got from your book. The world is divided into two types of people. There's successful people and there's lazy, despondent people. And you teach successful people to be more successful. Am I right?
Well, technically, yes. I don't believe that it's divided the way that you said it is, but I do work with successful people who want to become more successful and who want to understand what their success means and what it's brought to them in their lives.
Okay, but why do you work with losers? I don't understand that. Because
well,
they don't have the potential for success. Because here's something you say. You know you're going to be successful even before you have any achievements. It's a part of your personality for whatever reason. Isn't that right?
I think it is. I think it is. And I think the reason, to answer your question, I don't have enough time to work with everybody. So I pick where I can make the greatest impact. And when I can help someone who's successful understand their successes and why they have them and how they can help and bless the lives of others, then I'm able to have a bigger impact in the world than just working with a bunch of people.
But it's trickle down. You'll teach the top guy, and he or she will radiate that success to the people beneath them. Is that fair?
That's what it looks like, yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, now, these people, but the thing is, have you ever heard the saying, the child is the father to the man?
Of course.
It's Wordsworth. Yeah, okay, but you don't believe that. You believe that life is something we invent.
I do,
right?
Believe we invent life, yes.
Yeah, you feel that even if we feel trapped, we can create a new reality anytime we want. You don't believe that the child is a father to the man. You don't believe that we're trapped by our personalities.
I don't believe that we're trapped. I believe that we can create the life that we want, and obviously will always be some limitations because we have time limitations or physical limitations or different limitations, but I think we can look into life and see life and enjoy it however we want.
That's vague enough. You know, you're going to give me a lot of vague answers, and I invite the listeners today, help me. When the guy says something, you know, that sounds like legalese, and he's talking about success, don't take that. I mean, that's how a guru talks. You never know what they're talking about, so you have to make it up yourself. Now, you believe that extremism is the path to success. Am I right?
No,
you
you're not right.
I don't believe that. You listen to me, and then you'll answer me, okay?
Thank you.
You say that a good motto is try to be perfect. Try to be perfect like your Father in heaven is what you actually say. Your basic principle is that extremism is necessary for success. Successful people go overboard in the pursuit of their goals. That's the way to be successful. You have to overdo it. Am I right or wrong?
No, I think I have a different understanding of it than the way you've read what I've written. I understand perfection to be a process, not an end state.
Yeah.
And so I work.
You know what perfection means? Perfection means that your behavior is absolutely correct. 1 and 1 is 2. That's a perfect answer. Okay.
That's
one
definition.
1 and 1 is 3 is not a perfect answer.
That's one definition.
Go ahead. You want to play with words?
I'm playing with words. I think I'm looking at the etymology of the word, and I think the word has definitely been used to mean exactly what you just said it is. I just have a different feeling of the word.
No, it's feeling. You don't have feelings of words. They've got definitions. Does anybody else want to say something? Am I the only one listening?
No.
Go ahead, animal.
Do you want to say something? Do you believe that you can be perfect? Who's that, Alan Floor?
Hey, animal.
Do you believe you can be perfect?
Oh,
well, you believe
heck
that's
no.
your goal? That's what Emerson says. Try to be better. Overshoot your goal, okay?
You should always try to find the better way, whether it's how you do your job,
you know
how
what?
You live
I
your
knew
life.
You, I knew you were going to be running interference with it. I'm just happy you're not
I'm
yelling
not
at
running
me, okay?
interference because
sure
I don't think I don't agree with Andrew completely because I don't think we can be perfect, but I think that we can try to improve
yeah, he
always.
Doesn't mean
that
perfect.
We can always
he means self-actualized.
Do.
Perfect for him means self-actualized.
Enlightened.
Right,
enlightened.
Andrew.
Enlightened.
No,
yeah.
but they're the great sales tools, animal. Think about it. You can never be fully enlightened. You can never be perfect. What a great way to keep getting your customers back.
How do you get your customers?
I don't have any customers at the present moment. No, just kidding.
What word are we using, Andrew? You pick the word.
My clients come to me by referral by other people that I've worked with. I just attended a breakfast meeting this morning where the host of the breakfast meeting had been a client, and he said, I worked with Andrew. Andrew helped me do this, and if you're interested, here he is right here. And I stepped out to be on your show. But that's how I get my clients. I get my clients by people referring me and through the work that I do.
If you fly down to South America, like Buenos Aires, Argentina, to do your work. Is that right?
I do, yes. I've spent most of the year this year in Central America working down there with the great people of Honduras, Guatemala, Nicaragua, El Salvador.
Give us an example of, a project or a problem that one of your clients has had without revealing any names. You know, you can make, change certain things if you want.
Sure.
What people come to you for. Oh, let me ask something first, though. You said that the kind of work you do, like once someone hits, like Jerry, let's say, hits a success plateau, he would not agree that he's there. But let's say he is. Okay, once you get good, this is on page 112 of your book, once you get good, it gets hard to get better because you have only small changes to work with. If you're a totally backwards country and you put in an electrical system, everything's improved 1,000%. But from then on in, it can't get that much better in one fell swoop. Is that right?
In one fell swoop, yes, but we have electrical power here, but now we have the Internet. That's a lot better, right, than just having light.
Yeah. So. Okay, but we're talking about people, okay?
Sure, okay.
Do you only work with small changes? Like, already good?
I think that's the field that's of most value. Most people have the competencies. Now they need to start tweaking their behaviors and learning more about who they are and how they can be present in the world.
That's something I didn't understand. You said competencies are the foundation of success, right?
Yes.
And then once you become competent, you have nothing, you can do your job, then you have to start working on your behavior. I didn't understand what you meant by that.
Behavior, well, I separate it this way. Competencies are about what you do, and to me, behavior is about who you are. So at some point, you have to start thinking about who you are, how you're showing up, what's important to you. When you're 25 years old, you may be willing to sacrifice a whole lot of things, but then at 50, you may not be. You may not be thinking about those same things. And so and we're more willing at that time to be up and at it and to be more about what's important to us than it is to be about sacrificing everything for it.
Yeah, okay, I didn't understand what you said. Okay, but give us an example then of a project or a problem you solved for somebody.
Sure. Well, I think every time I think about this, I think about one client who I was working for, a leader, a woman, and she had a direct report that was reporting to her, and he was a real brown noser. And there was nothing that she could do to get him to overcome this behavior. And so
can you give us a specific manifestation of the way he tried to suck up to her?
Sure. Everything that she said, he agreed with, and then he started, and he would try to repeat it, and he just supported everything she said in a way that was inappropriate. It wasn't, and a way that everybody rolled their eyes and just said, this guy is not even thinking for himself. And the challenge was that he had a lot of potential. He had a lot of opportunity to grow. And so as we worked together, there came a moment when I had to sit with him and talk to him about being a brown noser. And what it was that he was from Ireland, and he didn't, so I tried. How do you tell somebody that, right? So the first question I asked him was if he knew who Eddie Haskell was. And because he kind of reminded me of Eddie Haskell, for those that are old enough to remember the Leave It to Beaver program, he was the neighbor kid that came in and was always sucking up to Mrs. Cleaver. And so it was that kind of thing. But coming from Ireland, he'd never seen the show. And so eventually I just had to go right in and tell him exactly what it meant. And he was extremely embarrassed by it. And it was a cultural thing more than it really was his way of being.
Are you smearing Irish people on my show? Are you saying
no,
that they tend to suck
no,
up to their bosses?
No, not at all. Not
that's
at all.
The way
just
they
for,
work.
Just for him, that's the way it was for him, and he claimed that it was a cultural thing. And but he made an immediate change. He made an immediate change and started putting forth his own opinions, and it worked out really well for him because when this lady retired,
okay,
he took
a position.
So who
were you coaching there, him or her? I don't understand.
Both. I can't just coach one person because then we have very little objectivity. It's all subjective to what I'm seeing and what that person is seeing. And so I coach the circle of influence around the senior leader, and we work all together. And so it becomes a very objective experience because I get to hear the points of views from every stakeholder to the process.
Okay, now to get to first base with personal improvement, you have to be able to accept criticism. Is that what you believe? Is that what you said?
I don't think that's to get to first base. I think to get to first base, you have to visualize what you want. But if you're gonna move towards something you want, then you definitely need to have feedback. And most often, our feedback comes in the form of criticism.
Okay, yeah. In fact, you said you have to believe people who criticize you.
I do. I believe them because I think that's their perspective, right? And they're seeing.
That's different. Don't play with me, okay? It's either that what they're saying is true. I'm not saying do they believe it's true. I'm saying is it true? Okay?
It's true for them.
You said in your book, if someone criticizes you, believe them. That's how they see it.
I accept that as truth.
Okay.
When the person says something to me, I accept it as truth.
Okay, so if I tell you that you're a bit fuzzy and you're a bit, you know, hard to pin down, you'd accept that as absolute truth, or are you too far advanced to accept that? Because I had the impression that's what you do at the beginning. Let me talk, okay? That's what you do at the beginning of your career, and then later on, you don't have to take negative feedback anymore. It's irrelevant. Am I right?
Well, I think those that feel like – no, you're not right. I think those that feel like they can't take feedback later on in their career are the ones that end up looking for another job late in their career, and they're the kinds of people that become your client more frequently than not.
Okay. Is there anybody on Twitter who's got a question, Rayanne? Can you watch that for me? This is your program.
Yeah, I'll watch it. Happy to watch it for you.
Yeah. You can't force me to be successful. I never said that. Resume strategy. There's people who are not born to be successful. They're born to be hung, okay? That's how it is. I know this guy agrees with me, but we won't go on about that. Okay? Now, the basis of success, again, competence is the foundation of success. Do you know anything about recruiting, Andrew?
I have a sister that's in that field. I understand she's quite good at it.
Yeah, but do you personally
know
anything?
I don't need to know anything about it because I can call her when I have a question.
Okay, yeah, but I was wondering, you know, what competencies would we be talking about in order to build a foundation of success for recruiters? Rayanne, you want to answer for him?
No.
I think if you have the traditional knowledge, skills, and abilities, those are the competencies that I'm talking about. There's entry-level requirements for every job, and if you need an MBA for a job and you don't have it, there's some people that might get that job, but it's not very likely if you're just applying from off the street that you're going to get that job.
Okay, so then you say on page 61, when you want to move forward from competence, you ask your friends to help you, but they're not allowed to give you negative feedback because you've already had a lot of that. That's what I was referring to.
Okay.
Right? You say that you can't develop yourself without input from other people. You got to ask your friends to help you, but they're not allowed to give negative feedback. Why not?
Well, I think you get negative feedback in many different ways. So from your friends, you don't want them to give you the negative feedback. I think I say on that page 61 that instead we need people who can see our light and encourage us to move into that, move us to shining brighter. That's really what makes a difference as we mature in our careers. And so there is negative feedback, and I've never said that you don't need it. I just say you have it from so many sources. So when you ask somebody to help you, you need to pull them in and ask them to help you be your better self, not your – in other words, I think people ought to focus more on what they should start doing instead of what they should stop doing. And if they start doing things, what they should stop doing becomes irrelevant because they don't have time to do it.
Okay. And you put down watching movies, TV, playing video games, right? And when I was reading that, I was saying, why be successful if you can't have any fun?
Well, I think fun becomes redefined. And there's a time for watching. You quoted Ecclesiastes, so I will too. There's a time for watching TV, and there's a time for focusing on what the heck you want to get out of your life. And so if all you do too much, and this is why I hate the word passion, is because passion leads people.
Go ahead.
Passion leads people to so many different places. It's not. I much prefer the word focus. So if I want to be a great surfer, I could do that. I just may have a great, and I could be real passionate about it. I just may have a hard time feeding my 7 children on that. And so what I want to do is still have time to go out and surf, but then be focused on what it is that that brings meaning to my life and that provides a living for the responsibilities that I have.
You know, I had another guest with a PhD who also had 7 children. I didn't ask him why, and I won't ask you either. Okay, now...
Because I don't watch TV. It was in the book.
Okay,
did you read it?
Yeah. Now, look, now you say, really, you know, get your friends to help you, but really, they don't have time for you. You can't count on your friends. But you need, if you want to be really successful, you need professional help. Yes or no?
Agreed.
Okay, and there's three levels of
yes,
help.
Yes, indeed.
Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, okay. So the first one is the mentor. Am I right about that?
Yes, you are right.
Okay.
You must have been reading a good book.
Yes, I did. You want to talk a bit about that? Otherwise, people are going to be saying I'm answering the questions for you. Okay, go ahead.
Well, the mentor is someone that we meet who models a behavior or an end state or a career path or something that we want to become. And so we spend a lot of time talking to that person, figuring out how that person got to where they are. And they tell us the strategies that they used, and they help us become a lot like them.
Okay, so they give you a path. The thing is, you see somebody who's in a position you want to be in, and you want to copy them, and they're very proud to tell you this is how you get there. Follow this path. Same as I took pretty well. Right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, now, Amy Alla, an award-winning guest of the year, I think that's what she was, she just joined the show, and she's asking what she missed. So I'm just going to let her know, because she's pretty successful, not as successful as Jerry, okay? But she's pretty successful in her own realm, and if there's some coaching you need for free to become even more successful, Amy, you can ask Andrew during the course, anytime during the show. Say, I have a question about myself. In fact, anybody listening, if you want to be better, put your hand up to your computer screen and say, I want to be better. I want to ask Andrew a question. And feel free to just barge in and say, I have a personal question, a business question for my own life to ask Andrew Thorne. Andrew, what's your website so everybody, if they're inspired by the show, they can find you later on?
It's andrewthorne.com. So I always say it's Thorne, not Thorny. It's just T-H-O-R-N.
That's right. That's a smart way to spell it. Good for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So, but how do you find a mentor?
I think the mentor comes from our circle of influence, right? Depending on where we're working, depending on where we're living, the people that were maybe perhaps friends of our parents that inspired us, they could be people close to our age that work, you know, a couple of levels up the organization, higher than us. So mentors are easy to find. We just have to be willing to look in the direction and ask for the help that we might need.
So how do you ask for help? Just for a specific, you know, on an ad hoc basis, when you don't know how to do this, can you tell me? Or, you know, I'd like to move up to the next position. Got any advice for me? Or does it have to be a formal thing?
I don't think mentoring is a formal thing. I think it's a very informal thing. I think we go to breakfast or lunch and we talk about the challenges that we're facing, and then we look to them and say, hey, how did you get to where you are? I had a great client this week that I spoke to, and she reached out to a lady in Oregon.
Bad
She's working here.
Not allowed to say that word on the show.
Reached out. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, we don't
sorry.
Say reach
sorry.
Out. Sorry.
Sorry. She called a woman in Oregon that she was familiar with, and she said to her, hey, I've appreciated watching your career, and our paths have crossed in many different paths. Can you help me? I'd like to take my career to the next level. And, of course, the lady was very willing and gracious to do that.
Mm-hmm. And so then really, I like what you just said. So you don't really have to figure out, you know, this guy's got nothing left to tell me. I don't have to, you know, formally say, I don't want you to be my mentor anymore and no more free lunches for you. You just don't ask any more questions. Is that right?
Yeah. You, the time comes, you grow past it. You grow past the relationship. It happens in all of our relationships.
Amy Alla, any questions for you? No. Okay.
Can I add something?
Go ahead. I noticed you got a new picture. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks. I
didn't say I like it. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I don't think a mentor necessarily has to come from above you either. I have been the most motivated by folks that come to me and ask questions from me, and then I kind of redefine what I'm doing, recognizing that, somebody's watching me. I can do better at what I'm doing. So the mentoring relationship can go both ways, and you can benefit as the mentee as well. So,
indeed.
Yeah, that's the mentee, the person below you, Amy. That's not your mentor, okay? You happen
I'm
to be
Rayanne.
Your teacher's.
This
that
is
Rayanne.
So yeah.
I can't tell you apart, okay?
I thought the mentee was that little animal that swims in the ocean.
That's a manatee.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
And it's not
okay,
little.
Now, the next level up from mentor is coach. Am I right about that?
Yes.
What's the next level above coach? I can't remember.
Sage.
Sage, oh yeah. Okay. Now, were you a coach or a sage? I'm not sure.
I think I'm beyond the three now, and I'm still looking to define the term.
Let's call you a coach just for business reasons, okay? What is coaching?
Coaching is unlike the mentor, where the mentor holds up a picture of self and says, this is how I am, and you can be like me. The coaching is more about holding up a mirror and asking the person to look into the mirror and to see their best self and to figure out what they need to do to become that person now.
Okay, so, but that's what you do professionally then. You coach professionally. Am I right about that?
Yes.
Okay, so like with this Irish guy, he had, you say, look, you've got a bad heritage from Ireland, and you've got to change that if you want to move ahead in the United States or Argentina or wherever that person was. Is that essentially holding up a mirror?
I think it is holding up a mirror because, you know, in order for a person to move forward, they have to recognize where they are right now. They have to see themselves. And we're so good as a people letting our blind spots deceive us. And we're so good at not seeing what everybody else is seeing. And so it just, I think that is.
Let me ask you a question. Okay, No. If somebody's got a bad temper, a boss with a bad temper, who chews out people regularly, and you're saying the coach is not supposed to focus on weaknesses, how do you coach someone out of their bad temper? You say a coach is supposed to help you capitalize on your strengths. If someone's a jerk, what strengths does she have?
Well, I need to know the person to figure out what strengths that they have, but the strengths are identifiable.
You know what? I should not be hearing that from you. You've got a treasure trove of experience with your clients. You should be able to just pick out one story after another.
I can pick out one story after another, but
that's the truth. And there's a lesson I'm going to teach you, okay? You learned something from this show. Go ahead.
Well, I can pick out one story after another. The problem was I didn't pick out the story. You did. And so I didn't get a chance to really fully understand what the strengths of the person were. I got that she was a jerk and that she had a hard temper. But what I was going to say was that the strengths come from the evaluations that we do. So we might do an MBTI and look at the personality structure of the individual and find out where those strengths are. We might do a CPI 260 report that talks about their skills as a leader. We might do a 360 report that asks the people around them to really evaluate and find out, and then we can find out what those strengths are. And as you can see that there are jerks and people that have bad tempers that are always seen as leaders. They get leadership positions, and we start to move then into where they're really appreciated as a leader. Leadership is about making things better. And so when the person's just there working on their weaknesses, they never become better. But when they move into their strengths, they do.
I got a feeling we're shuffling words around here because, you know, sooner or later you're going to have to tell this person you should be doing something different than what you're doing. And if that's the way of not saying what you're doing is bad, it's pretty much the same thing, isn't it?
Well, it is the same thing, right? So yes, it is the same thing, but it brings about a different set of movements. So if I'm looking at my weaknesses, I'm always looking towards the past. If I'm looking at my strengths, I'm looking towards my future. And that's where I want to help people grow into. I want to help people grow into their future.
Okay, yeah. You know what? Try to be more specific. Bring up these real-life stories instead of the generalities, okay? We can get those anywhere. I want your gut real-life stories. We still got a half an hour to go.
Okay.
Real-life stories. Okay.
Sure.
Now, wait a sec. Before we get to the sage, I want to point out something. Successful people aren't necessarily happy. You make that clear in the book. In fact,
yes.
You talk about a guy who's got his own plane or something like that, and
yes.
He likes to show off all the power he's got around him, and he tells you, to your surprise, that he's never been happy a day in his life. Am I right?
Yes, you are. Yeah.
Okay. Why aren't successful people happy?
Well, because I think they're after success. And so they're looking for success, and success is like eating food. You know, you can eat food, and you're going to be hungry 3 or 4 hours from now. And so, and that's the way success is. It doesn't fill us up. But it's the goal. Society keeps telling us that we've got to be successful, that we have to be successful, that we have to move towards successful things. And yet that's not really what brings meaning and purpose into our lives. And so I help people see beyond their successes. And I'm not saying that success isn't great and it doesn't, it's not better to be, you know, it's easier to be happy. But I spent my time working in countries this year where people make $300-$400 a year, and they're happy, and they're
generally
focused.
Happy. Because I was going to say that you could be born happy, or you could be perhaps raised happy. So you're just happy with the way things are. You're not always criticizing yourself for not having enough money or not being as good as the next guy, but you're happy. Just like you said, you know you're successful, you know you're happy. Some part of your brain is stimulated all the time, whereas for the successful people, they're confident enough to push their weight around and do whatever they have to do with the competencies, but they don't really feel happy. And that's why, just like you're saying, they think if they succeed, then they're going to be happy, but they're not. But happiness and success actually precedes any kind of achievement. Am I right about that?
I think so. I think happiness comes from within. So it is a mindset. It is an ability to look around and to be satisfied with the things that you have. And I always can feel satisfied today, but want more tomorrow. And so I don't think that just because I'm satisfied doesn't mean that I'm not going to stretch myself in a new direction tomorrow.
Okay.
Whatever you do, do not quote Abraham Lincoln about happiness.
I don't know who Abraham Lincoln is.
Yeah, thank you, Ray, okay. For reminding me about that. I do it all the time. But okay, now let me. That's an inside joke. Okay, let me just say something. So, coach, though, you got to pay the coach. How do you know that this coach is for you?
I think you have to have time together. So I never accept a client without meeting with the client. And the first thing that I say to the client is, I haven't accepted this opportunity, and I'm here to find out if I want to work with you. And you're here to find out if you want to work with me, and if at the end of this conversation either one of us doesn't want to, we're going to move on. And I'm not going to – your organization – so a specific example, I was brought in by an organization recently to work with a team that was very challenged, and they had a significant project that they're working on that's very, very critical to the operations of the organization. And they're not functioning well as a team. And so I'm brought in to do that, and I was actually hired in advance. But when I met with the person that was leading the team, I told her, I said, I'm not going to take the job until you and I have had a chance to meet. And if you don't want to work with me, great, let's help you find somebody else. But more importantly, it's possible that I'm not going to want to work with you. And if I don't want to work with you, I'm going to move on.
Yeah, okay, we got the point. Don't drag it out. I got an audience here, okay?
All right. You told me to be specific, so I was going deep into the details.
Yeah, short as well. Short and sweet. Now, that's another rule, okay? Now,
okay.
Yeah, when down and dirty is fine, too. Now, when you tell somebody you don't want to work with them, how do you do that?
I just look at them and say, I don't think I want to work with you.
Really?
I do, yeah.
They're successful enough to handle that kind of
That's not my problem. I'm going to move on.
How often have you said that?
Within the last week, I said it 3 times.
Anybody committed suicide after you say it to them?
Not that I know of.
Okay. Yeah, see, but that's pretty rough. Okay. And so how do you get rid of your coach? How do you know you're finished with your coach? You said it takes at least a year to make progress.
The forward motion stops. And, you know, getting back to the telling people that I don't want to work with them, one of the things that I'm very valued for is I speak directly. And I don't hide the truth, and I don't hide. So I speak very directly to the need, and I don't do it in a rude way, but I just say I don't think this is the right opportunity for either one of us.
Mm. Okay. And how do you know when you're not moving forward anymore?
It just feels stagnant. It feels like you're not accomplishing anything new.
Uh-huh.
No benefit.
Okay. Well, how do you know you're getting no benefit? Because Rayanne, the process is slow and long, so it's hard to see benefit in a short time frame, right, Andrew?
Yeah, but what he's saying is that you know it becomes stagnant.
Did you read his book? Did you read his book? I read his book. Okay.
It's my brother.
I read it recently, not like you. I didn't read it because I'm his sister. Okay, I read it because I wanted to learn something. Now, okay. What's the sage level? Is a sage somebody? Yeah. How do you know? Like, you hire a sage? How do you identify a sage? What's the story with the sage?
I think sages come into your life. You know, they're very wise people. They're calm. They have a lot of experience. They can hold up a picture or a mirror. They help those around them.
The sage should be talking into the phone, not looking around, okay? Go ahead.
Sorry, I thought I was talking into the phone.
No, so, you became muffled, okay?
Okay, sorry. So what I was saying was that the sage is a calming presence. They're wise. They're able to be familiar with both a life side of the equation and a leadership side of the equation. So sometimes you have people that are just wholly focused on one aspect, a performance coach or a speaking coach or somebody that's just really focused on it, whereas a sage has a lot of experiences in a lot of different areas and can really converse on any type of conversation that would be meaningful for the client.
Okay, now I've been a little verbose. I want to confess, everybody on Twitter, I've talked a little too much. Not like you think. I talked when I'm trying to explain something. I haven't been as short and sweet as I advised Andrew to be. So I'm going to move on to the sage. It's so vague. Who knows what it is? I'm going to move on.
No, I want to give you an example of a sage in our lives.
Your boss, Sumpser, right?
Would be considered a sage, okay? John Sumpser is a sage.
In your life, John Sumpser is a sage, right?
Don't tell me who's a sage in my life.
I'm not saying in your life,
in our space. I said in our space.
Is he a calming presence?
Yes. Have you ever had a conversation with him? Yes, you have.
Yeah, well, yes. I went to lunch with John, okay?
Okay, well, you know that he's calming and that he knows a lot about a lot of things.
I didn't say I didn't like him. Okay, well, we talked about other things. Who's going to talk about business all the time?
Okay, that's the point. Go back and listen to what Andrew just described as a sage.
Are you the guest? Are you the guest or is your brother?
I am the
guest.
Okay. Sister.
Okay, now, Andrew is 6 foot two, nice looking guy, and chicks throw themselves at him. Okay, when you go to a foreign country, there's a lot of sexual predators out there waiting to get jiggy with you. Is that true, Andrew?
Yes, as a matter of fact, it is true.
Okay, and the thing is, you feel a little turned on when the overtures come, but you decide you're not going to go the way of Dave Petraeus. And we want to talk about that because you make a big issue of this. This is one of your primary topics. Am I right?
I think it is. I think I'm very flattered by the invitations that I've received. I recently was in El Salvador and I had a woman ask me if I had an El Salvadorian girlfriend, if I'd ever had one. And I said no. And she asked if I wanted one. And I said no. And I recognized what she was doing, but she said, why don't you want one? And I said, because I'm happily married. I've been married 25 years. I love my wife. I love my children. And I'm not interested in that. And her response kind of surprised me. She said, oh, yes, I believe in loyalty, too. And I knew that she was married. And so it was just an interesting experience for me that she would be requesting. And I've, you know, so I've had those experiences. But I think those are the experiences that are just more of a, What was that? You know, the grabbing hands grab all they can, but when they grab it, they're not satisfied. And
okay,
so
let's say somebody like Dave Petraeus has a little action on the side. How does that hurt anybody?
Well, I think we discovered how it hurts anybody.
I think it's discovered his family.
Okay, no. Let's say you're not exposed. That's one thing. You know, when you get caught and there's a conflict of with the rules of the organization or something like that, but let's say you don't get found out. You still believe it's bad, right?
I do, because I think then there's an integrity issue. Even if you don't know, I know. And so I think that the integrity issues that come, it's what clouds people's lives and judgments. So if you're going to be somebody that goes out and has an extramarital affair, then just own that and say, I appreciate the people that step up and say, this is who I want to be. And sometimes they have a marriage that allows that. And I think that's fine. Then nobody is getting hurt. If nobody's going to really be hurt by it, why do you have to be secret about it? Bring it out. We live in a perfectly acceptable world that accepts many different types of behaviors.
No, not many people accept that openly. Not that I know of. Okay, so
well, I think it's becoming more acceptable. And I live in Los Angeles, and I work with some Hollywood crowds, and I think they're in that crowd. It's acceptable to have these types of multiple relationships. And
I think in France it is. I didn't know that in California it is. But okay, I just wanted to know. Your main thing there is you're going to feel guilty. That's it, right?
Well, I don't think it's about guilt. I think it's about alignment. And so I think if you're pretending to be something from the outside and inside you're not consistent with that, then you're not aligned. And I don't think you can move forward when you're unaligned.
Okay.
And that was part of the problem with David Petraeus in the end, is that his actions were not aligned with what the military oath that he had taken. And
you're wrong, Brianne.
He was under the military.
When he started sleeping with this woman. I don't want to argue
with
David Petraeus.
Oh, yeah, you need to go
he
back and
gone
research
to, He would have been jailed, okay?
Hey, Jeremy, Worthington has a question or a challenge
for
Andrew.
Go ahead.
On Twitter, he said that Andrew sounds very more pompous than anything, and that has a question that a coach that won't take on a challenge. So I'm suspecting this goes back to when Andrew declined.
I agree with somebody. He shouldn't take on somebody who doesn't, you know, who's not ready.
Right, I agree too. But I'd like to hear Andrew's response to why you wouldn't take on that challenge.
What was the question? Was why am I pompous?
So a coach that won't take on a challenge. That was basically the tweet.
So that's the question. Why won't you take on the challenge?
Right.
Well, I figure this. I figure I'm 47 years old. I would like to live to be 94, so I have 47 years left. And there's only so much amount of my time that I can give to other people, because I do have a big family and that's where I spend my time. And so I look into the lives of the people, and when we're not aligned, when we don't make a good match, when we don't make a good pair, so it's not always the challenge, it's the alignment. I'm working with a client, and the client was relieved of responsibility, and a new leader came in, and they reaffirmed my contract. But the more we worked together, the more I could see that if we had been contracting, I wouldn't have agreed to work with that person. And so I just flat out said, look, I think if we were contracting, neither one of us would really want to work with each other. Why don't you just buy me out of my contract? And that's what happened. That's what happened. So I think what I value more than anything is being honest and open with people. And if they get that from me from the very beginning, they like to work with me. If they don't, then it's just blowing smoke up someone's skirt, and that's not the business that I do.
And it's just collecting a paycheck and not really helping anyone.
Yep.
Derek Zeller has a question, interestingly enough. So he says, got it. So if you live in L.A. and are famous, it's okay to cheat on the spouse?
No,
I want to go there. I want to move on from that, okay?
No, wait, wait.
No, no, you
this
don't
is out
take
on
over the
Twitter.
Show. I thank
it's
you for
on
relating
Twitter.
It to me. Thank you for telling me. I decide which one we're going to dwell on. I like Derek,
okay,
but I don't want to talk about that right now. Because I don't feel I'm getting to the
And that isn't
issue.
What he said, Derek. Go back and listen to the tape. That's not
Tell
what
he him to call in and talk if he wants to. I'll
yeah,
let
call
him
in and ask
he
if you got a question about that.
Thanks, Brianne. Okay. Now, the thing is, you say with this thing with cheating, if someone has cheated on you and you want to repair the relationship, what you have to do, all you have to do is remember that this is a fallible human being. Any other approach will leave you feeling the sting and licking your wounds for a very long time. The pain can only be satisfied by love, or I'm going to say compassion. Recognizing, is this all you have to do to repair a relationship? Recognize that the person who hurt you is a fallible human being. Is that what you're saying? Is the cure to anger?
No, I'm not saying that's how you repair the relationship, because the relationship takes two sides, but that's your side of it. So you have to be able to see beyond. So if you and I had a relationship and I disappointed you, I could see you as a human being, but you may choose not to be to see me that way. So we have to see each other in those through those
okay,
eyes.
Okay, yeah. Oh, I don't want to. Okay, I didn't. I'm sorry about the repair of the relationship. I mean, get over anger. So all I have to do, if you were stung by Jeremy Worthington, the boy wonder, by his comment a second ago. Just imagine, I know you're not, you're a sage, but let's imagine you were. Would you just have to say, I know this guy's just a nobody. He's, you know, jealous of me, and I can understand that. That's how human beings are, and your anger will go away. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I didn't have a reaction to. I'm assuming Jeremy's the guy that said I sounded pompous.
Yeah,
so
imaginary.
Use your
imagination. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't have a reaction to that, because maybe I do sound pompous, and to somebody who doesn't understand the difference between confidence and arrogance, it could sound a lot like pompousness. And so it doesn't hurt me to hear that feedback. And I think I'd like to know more. Well, what is it that I did so that I could examine
it? I'm imagining that someone has hurt you, okay? If someone has hurt you, you've done something nice for somebody, but they didn't appreciate it or something like that, you know? And so you feel, boy, because I read your older blog, and you admit that you feel fear. You feel lack of confidence. You feel stung by people. You feel all the negative emotions. You don't deny that you feel them as well, right?
That's right.
So when
That's
you
right.
get stung and when you get angry and someone scolds you for something, when you were trying to do something nice for them, you just get over that by saying, oh, geez, this poor soul is, you know, he's human. What can he do? Is that
yeah.
it?
Yeah, that's not it, though, because I don't think it happens. I don't, you know, the word get over it sounds like it just is like snapping your fingers and then you're done. So to me, it's a process, and sometimes, depending on how close it is, like, you know, if you hurt my feelings, it would be a lot easier for me to get over than if Rand did, because we have an invested relationship that goes back 47 years of my life, and so when if she were to hurt me, it would be a lot harder, but I would still be able to get over it, because I love her, and because she's my sister, and so there comes a point, though, that when you have to decide, even with a sister or a mother, or do I want to get over it? Is this a toxic relationship? Even if I get over it, will they continue to treat me this way? So I think it's more than just saying get over it. It's a process, and it's self-reflection.
Yeah, but if you can get over it, what does it matter how they treat you? You've got like an immunity.
I'm not going to stand on the firing line every day. So it's not immunity just because, you know, I'm not going to let them shoot me every day just because I can get over it.
Okay, so if you have a boss who's, you know, vituperative, nasty, you shouldn't be around there. You shouldn't just shrug and say, this is life.
Look for a new job.
Uh-huh.
Find a good recruiter and get you a great opportunity.
You're talking about being spiritual and stuff like that, and maybe you think, you know, this stuff should just wash over you. It doesn't mean that much because you've got this, you know, super point of view. I was just checking on that.
Well,
okay?
I don't think it can wash over you when you stand in the firing line every day.
Okay. Now, you say when you complain to people all the time, it makes them defensive. And so they can't take criticism when it's really valid. Is that right?
I think if you're on the defensiveness, it's very hard to take criticism, yes.
Okay, but how do you give criticism then? If someone's making a lot of mistakes on the job and you're the boss, what do you do?
I say something like this. I want to give you some feedback, and I want to set up the parameters for me to be able to give this to you. I know that some of the things that I'm about to say will sound judgmental and maybe even critical, but that's not why I'm telling you them. I'm telling you them so that you can see what's around you and then decide if you want to do something about it. And you may already be aware of this, and if you are, then you can just say, I'm already aware of this and I don't have a concern with it. And so I'm able to really talk directly that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what about in personal life?
What's that?
That was good. Mm-hmm. What about personal life?
Personal life, it always becomes a little bit more difficult, but I open the relationship up with that authentic behavior, and so we're able to talk about a lot of different things. And so, you know, one example comes to my mind where I was working with a man who was having some trouble with his marriage, and they had had some experiences before they were married that were negative for them. Specifically, they had an abortion. And it was something that he wasn't proud of, and it had troubled him in his entire life. And I was able to help him just to let go of that. He didn't have to think about that or worry about that anymore. It was something that had really been past him now. And so he was able to move into a new direction. And I think that's really what has to happen in a personal side, is we have to get really good at forgiving ourselves. Most of the time, nobody around us is really holding us a grudge against us for the things that we did.
Okay, you're not answering my question.
Maybe I didn't understand
my question.
Maybe I didn't understand it.
Maybe you didn't, okay? When there's a boss, you've got positional authority. So you can say that, which I thought was pretty good, the way you approached it. But the person, even if you weren't saying it the right way, they couldn't talk back. But when you want to talk to somebody, might be your sister, she doesn't have to listen to you. And if she's not a mature person, she's going to take it the wrong way. You know, I don't like being criticized. It means my whole life is over if someone, you know, tells me I've got a spot on my blouse. So how do you deal with somebody like that? Do you have a way?
Okay, now I get it. Yeah, I had this experience actually Sunday night with my older brother. I gave him some feedback on something that he had done, and it wasn't positive feedback. It was just, you know, but it was feedback that I thought he needed to hear as he was moving forward, and specifically had to do with casting of a show. And so, you know, I gave him some feedback about a character, and I knew it was a character that he really liked, but somebody that I had found as an audience member, and I'd heard other audience members, and I knew he wasn't going to like it. So I said, I'm going to tell you something that I think you probably won't like hearing, but I want you to hear it so that you can, as you go forward, you can hear what the impact is when you have this character in your show. And I don't think he liked it. In fact, I know he didn't like it. But I hope that later on he thought about it, and maybe, you know, the person that I am, and maybe that will have some weight as he thinks about it deeper.
Okay, but he let you finish your criticism. He didn't cut you off.
No, he didn't. He interrupted, and he tried to tell me why I was wrong, and you know, that's okay. On a personal level,
yeah,
I expect that a lot.
Yeah, your message didn't get across. Yeah, your message didn't get across, and you don't have a solution for it except hope either. You're just like everybody else, right?
Well, I think, but see, the difference is where I think I would be not just like everybody else is I'm willing to engage in the difficult conversation. And so rather than avoid it, rather than keep it tucked under the rug, I'm willing
to
engage in the difficult conversation.
I'm willing to tell people what they're doing wrong, too, okay? They just don't want to hear it, okay? And I'm not satisfied.
Stop yelling.
I'm not satisfied with hoping. Yeah, okay, by the time I get to that point, I'm mad. I'm insistent, and I'm telling them, hey, don't you realize what you're doing? You know, and if they say, hey, don't do that to me. Don't attack me. You know, it's not good enough for me to just hope that in the future, someday, they're going to realize where I was coming from. Now, there's not much time left. I don't know. I feel like I haven't really got to the guts of what you're interested in yet. Except for the next, you know, 10 minutes, is there something you'd specifically like to talk about that we haven't covered?
Well, I think where my focus is today, and it's for various reasons, but my focus is really on the second half of life. And I think it's because of where I'm aging into, but I think that there's an experience that happens to all of us, and it's a lot of people call it a midlife crisis. I don't think it has to be, but I think every one of us is going to pass through a midlife transition. And so I think the midlife transition is really important, and it's important to try to figure out, and the earlier we can figure out in our lives, the better the rest of our lives will be. It's kind of like saving money. When we save money early on in our lives, it has a better return on investment for us. And so I think that's where my focus is with so many of my clients right now, is leaning into that second half of life.
Okay, you actually published something on your blog and in the book that you found, I think, on another site. And it's five things that old people say that how to live life. And I thought these were better than the average things that don't mean very much. The simple things matter most, right? Humor and time cure most pain. Yeah, here's one, though. It says, choose your spouse carefully. If you're 22 or 25 years old, you know, it says this is going to be the most important decision in your life. How can you choose your spouse carefully? You don't know what's going to happen. Even you say you and your wife are no longer the same people that you were when you got married, and you've had trials as you both change. Am I right?
Yes, yes.
So how can you make that decision? How can you choose your spouse carefully?
Well, you know, it's a very subjective process. So I chose my wife because she was smoking hot. I mean, you know, I'm being really honest with you. You know, that's why
that's
I chose
careful.
Her.
Yeah, yeah, that's careful.
I mean, it wasn't. These were things that other people said, not what I said. But it worked out for me because I was committed to the relationship, and it worked out for me because she was committed to the relationship. And so I didn't know that she was a good cook. I didn't know if she shared the same spiritual values that I do, or to what level or to what extent. Those were things and conversations that we had along our lifetime together. But what we've been willing to do is we've been willing to have those types of conversations. So
okay, so but you know what? You pretty well said that at this point, choose your spouse carefully. That doesn't make any sense, okay? I think you've agreed with me.
I just right? was reporting what the older people that I interviewed
said. No, you endorsed it. You
okay.
endorsed it.
Well,
I
think, and I endorsed it because I think it's important.
Okay. Now
so what was important to me at 22 years old when I got married was to have a very good-looking wife. And so.
Okay. And when you believe, you actually will go to a client's place and lie down on the floor and sleep for 10 minutes. Am I right about that?
I have done that, yes.
Uh-huh. And you think power naps are good, but I have to tell you, not everybody can nap during the day. I cannot nap. And my mother told me I did not sleep during the day. So I know it's, you know, just something I was born with, okay?
I think everybody has a different resting, you know, period, and sometimes I rest by sleeping, but other people rest by doing something else. So,
mm-hmm. Okay, go with the flow. So sometimes you just have to, you know, bad things are happening, just accept it. That's sort of a big message for you, right?
Well, I think, you know, you and I have talked on Twitter a lot about optimism, and you used some term that I can't pronounce and don't understand anyways. I think it means over-optimistic. But I think, really, in myself, I think I'm a pessimist. And I think people outside of me think of me as an optimist, but inside of me, I'm always planning for the worst. So I think that's very pessimistic. But outside of me, I'm living for the best. And so I think it's really important to know where we're oriented as we look to life. And I expect good things to happen, but I also expect when I'm planning that bad things are going to happen, so I'm ready for them.
Here's the last point, then. You keep saying life is very good. life is not very good. There's a lot of suffering in life, okay? And some people are able to see past that suffering. Most aren't. Sometimes it's physical, and it's really hard for anyone to see past it. Life is not very good. Am I right or wrong?
I think you're wrong, but you're entitled to your opinion. You're the host.
Rayanne, you get the last word.
Oh, well, I think life is a lot of pain, Highness, and I don't necessarily agree with Andrew, but that's all right because I have worked through my pain and now found a much better place. So
Andrew's
I think we all
face...